Preparing to delve in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Delve. My name is Nathan.
And I'm Alex.
And Alex, how are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
I never get the chance to ask, but I really wanted to today. That's all. Today on the show, I am very happy to say that we have a special guest. Did you know that?
Yes. Yes, I
Good.
Did.
here to discuss Everyverse is the publisher and the founder of Pardon Us Gaming, Deborah Honig-Perizek. Deborah, thank you for coming on.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, I was really excited to have you on the show because when I saw what you had given us for Everyverse, it was really unlike anything I had seen before. And
oh,
that always
great.
Excites me. Yeah, the history of this game just by itself is really interesting to me. Can you tell us a little bit about how Everyverse came to be?
My late husband started gaming way back in the 1970s with the little white box set of D&D, and then played pretty much everything that came on the market before, say, 1995. He built groups. He taught his younger brother how to play. He got me hooked on gaming. I really, 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 in the early 1980s, wanted to play a Star Wars adventure right after Return of the Jedi came out. We didn't have, of course, any Star Wars games at that time, and so we used our set of rules and played a Star Wars adventure, and I was hooked. No ifs, ands, or buts. And he kept developing, and we kept playtesting with our gaming group back in Iowa. And we played scenarios, everything from, like I said, Star Wars to Highlander, anything else that came out of Den's head. Like we had one adventure where the four of us, three guys and me, plus Den as the game master, started off as simple spacers and ended up becoming the guardians of good and evil in the Everyverse, actually. Then he passed on, and I kept working for a long time and pulled myself together after he left this plane of existence. And I got laid off and suddenly realized that I needed something else to do. After a big, long weekend role-playing session, kind of a role-playing reunion in Iowa in mid 2015, I suddenly realized that I had a product. And so I've been working ever since and finding all that he left behind. And thank goodness
right.
I did backups before I got rid of his computer.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, backups, you never know how important they are until you actually have a project you're working on long term.
Oh, I know. Yep. I pulled it off of CDs and pulled it out of old WordPerfect and got it into Word.
Oh, wow.
And finally, learned just how many different places that you can go and now get books on demand and layout help and artists and everything. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And we couldn't do that many years ago.
Yeah, the amount of online resources especially that are out there for all sorts of things in game creation is fantastic.
I've had some really good luck finding some great artists and some help from publishers. I'm also finding that the International Game Designers Network has been a very great resource. I was voted in as a full-time member late last year. So
wonderful.
I'm really excited about that.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. We end up spending quite a bit of time on social media, talking to people, and there are tons of great artists on there and lots of great writers that like to show off their work. So that, yeah, it's really easy to shop around for art and proofreaders now.
I know that Dennis and our friend Jim, who I mentioned earlier, used to talk about trying to get things published, but neither of us had the resources to put forward, where you'd have to buy the books and hold the inventory and hope you sold them and so on.
Right.
So now that the producing on demand is just so much better.
Yeah. No, print on demand is a terrific resource. So many people are using that. When did Dennis actually start working on Everyverse?
I would say probably mid to late 80s. And okay. So, yeah, we developed it. Well, he developed it. We played it in the 90s and up to the early 2000s.
So you got to be one of like the early playtesters as well.
Yes. And it was myself and our friend Jim Poland, Rich Seiler, and Dwayne Hartsey were the main playtesters. And Den was our game master.
Beautiful. Now, you did say that you had played a Star Wars sort of RPG. Am I going to assume that you played a Jedi?
Yeah, I guess you could say I did, but we started the adventure where I was one of the guards in the red for the Emperor.
Oh, okay.
And I don't remember all of what happened, but I ended up helping Luke out somewhere along the line, helping him because we didn't, unlike the movies now, which I'm not a huge fan of the last two or three movies. They managed to hold the universe or the Republic after they won it. And then Luke and I went on some adventures to find the source of the Force, which there was something that was starting to feel wrong or go wrong in the Force. And we actually ended up finding some kind of I think it was a planet with some type of a machine on it or something. Maybe it was something organic. It's been like since the early 80s, so I don't remember exactly what happened. We found the source of the Force. And what was wrong is there was actually something like a cockroach in it. So there was literally a bug in the Force.
You know what? That if episode 9 ends with a cockroach in the middle of the Force, I'd actually be fine. I'd be like, hey.
That would be kind of interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I'd love that. Like,
we predicted this.
We knew it was coming.
We knew it. Yeah, so this has been a long time in the works, if we're talking about like the 80s to today.
You're talking about a very long development cycle, which isn't bad necessarily.
Yeah, well, Dennis has been gone for a while. And so it took me a number of years to pull myself together. And then I was still working my job as an IT professional and a little too stressed sometime to really put it together. Yeah. And then my late husband sent me a little dog that has helped me along the way. That's how I got into this because of my dog, I was out walking and met a neighbor because of her dogs. And then she helped me get into, I don't really like to admit, but I spent some time at MLM and I did learn a few things though. And that's how they were always saying, you ought to have your own product too. I realized we had that after we had that gaming reunion that I had my product. So the last few years since he died, there hasn't really been anything going on. But yes, still, indeed, we have had a long development cycle.
Was there any point where you were kind of looking at what Dennis had built and was trying to figure out what he was thinking with those mechanics or how they worked?
Some of the things that I really didn't get as well as I got now, I think it was before I was on the first podcast, I really dove in and really tried to get into what he was thinking. And so I do have a better idea of things. The only thing that still kind of gets me every once in a while is figuring out the age pool. Most of the rest of it I can talk about in pretty good terms, I'd say. The main thing that I'm finding is that on the fourth book, which we're working on now, we have to edit it because so much it has happened technologically in the last few years.
Is it more the actual mechanics that were in it that you have to start looking at, or it's the technology that you use to implement it?
This is actually the technology that he was suggesting for play. We're redefining cars now, or vehicles now, because, you know, we all have our music in the cars and we, you know, cars are self-driving now. We're updating that. And then I think that there are a couple of other sections that we're going to need to fill out a little bit just based on some current tech.
Right. Okay. So there's some like terminology and such.
Yes.
So what I'm kind of getting is Eververse is sort of born out of a love for role-playing games that you and Dennis had way back, the long, long ago.
Yeah, it was born because Den and the rest of the group, I'm kind of a latecomer to the group, they wanted to play other scenarios, like they wanted to take the movie Highlander. And play that. But there wasn't a gaming system that would allow that kind of flexibility. And or maybe they wanted to play something in a book And so there just wasn't anything that they felt they could mold. And so Dan said, right, you know, hey, I can do these, you know, I can make some more flexible rules.
Right. Yeah. So this is sort of like the original setting nonspecific system where there is, yes, not really a setting attached. So that's really interesting. I like the idea because, like, nowadays we are familiar with a few systems where you can kind of do anything. But this was like before any of that was around.
I guess so. Yes.
I'm pretty sure. And again, Alex will tell you I'm not an expert at this.
Nathan is definitely not an expert on these.
I'm not an expert at pretty much anything except Pokemon.
I know for when I was younger, Nathan, a lot of things we did instead of like playing D&D by the book, for instance, was we would just not use a book and it would just kind of be off the cuff role play.
Okay.
But that's still a little different. So
you were kind of trying to use the system, but in a not the setting kind of scenario.
Didn't even use the system. Didn't have dice.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Okay.
That. Yeah.
Okay. Oh boy. But wow, a diceless way of doing Dungeons and Dragons. That's
from what I've heard from our friend Jim. He and Den used to do that. Way back in the early days of this development, they didn't use dice, and I think they even used to play in our college planetarium.
That sounds like a really fun place to play a game, honestly.
I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
I wasn't involved at that time, but sounds like it'd be cool.
I need to find a planetarium and a gaming group that can abuse this planetarium. Star Wars or Warhammer in a planetarium and you'll be good.
Wow. That'd be great.
I like that. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And you know what you can do is if you can link it up to your Roll20 map, you can put the Roll20 map on the planetarium. Oh, great.
Yeah. No.
Put your characters on.
No.
There you go. That would be fun.
Way to ruin an atmosphere, Nathan.
You just want the stars.
Yep.
You just want well, that's fine too. That works. The thing I know is going to interest Alex, and I thought it was very interesting, but he'll probably understand it better, is the actual mechanics of every verse. So can you tell me a little bit about the branching skill tree?
We start off when you're rolling your character or you're generating your character, you determine how many terms you want to serve in a profession. And we, in the book, we give examples of professions, but you could really be, that unicorn detective if you want.
Perfect.
As long as your game master says, hey, that's groovy, then okay. But you determine how many terms you've served. And from there, you get your skill points. And it's three skill points per year or 12 for a four-year term. Every term is 4 years. And then if you look at the character sheets that we have, I think I spent on these, since this is a character sheet that I gave you for a demo one shot, we really used only 12 points out of the possible 24 for the 2 year term. We start with the most general level, say for example, the vehicle. And what's its primary attribute, which is the motion skill. And then that gives you your base score of 110. And you can find that at the top of the character sheet, of course. And then how many skill points that you put in. Each level has to have 3 points in it to get to go to the next more specific level. You can see that the vehicle has 3 in it. And then they could go to the air, since they wanted to specialize in things that fly. That one has skill points of 3 in it. And then they could go on to the more specific helicopter. And since that has only 1 skill point in it, now they were just getting started. So then the add column that we have is how many skill points you get to add to the base to find the skill score that you will be rolling against when you make any attempts. And so in the first level, you get to add 3. So that becomes a 113 since your motion skill is 110. In the air, when you get to the next more specific, the air category, you get to add 6 because you have what you learned as, you know, in general vehicle skills. And then what you've learned now in air. And so you get to add 6 to the motion for a skill score there of 116. Mm-hmm. And then roughly the same thing for the helicopter, where you get to add 1. You get to add all of the previous skill points plus that 1 for the 117.
Okay. I see what Nathan means by branching now. So it's kind of like umbrellas where you go from general skills to very specific skills.
Yeah, we call it a tree.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense. It's got branches.
Yeah, and so then when you would roll, you make your attempt, and say you're going to, you know, just try to start a vehicle. And so then we would put any modifier, say my attempt is I'm going to try to start this helicopter or what. Then we would, if we were going to do the helicopter, you'd know in specific what you're supposed to do. So then you'd have any modifiers against that. Say like, you know, you're trying to do it in a hurry and you know, somebody's shooting at you. So that's like a minus 10. So right. Then say you roll your 4d10 and all you have to do is roll them like one at a time or get them in some kind of a row. And then if you look up that score in the SD table, and if your score is equal to or less than the skill score minus modifiers, then you succeeded. If it's greater than, you fail.
That makes sense to me probably more than it does to Nathan.
Well, I was like, ooh, D10s. I like D10s.
It's I know you have never played the Warhammer games for role-playing, Nathan.
No.
But it's really similar to that, where you roll under your score to succeed.
Oh, okay. Well, that does make sense, though. I do understand why you'd want to do that. I was just really interested in the fact that it was a D10-based system.
Yeah.
Because I don't see
So I believe, and it, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the fact is the higher your score is, the better your odds of success are.
Yes.
Okay. So right. So you can still fail, Nathan. But you roll your dice and you want to get under your score that you're rolling for, and the modifiers make it harder to do that by subtracting from the total.
Right. I get that. Yeah, because if my score is higher, it is harder for me to fail if I'm trying to roll underneath it.
It's easier for you to roll underneath it.
Yeah. Right,
because
right.
You're gonna, your score minus the modifiers is still a higher score. And
right. Got it.
You sure you got this, Nathan?
I got it. If I'm rolling numbers, it's easier to roll underneath a 117 than if it's like a 6, which is probably what I'd get most of the time.
Yes, probably, Nathan.
All my skills are a 6.
You need to roll under 6 on 4d10. Go.
Yeah. Yeah, if good I luck with that.
Yeah. Yeah, come with, on, nat ones.
With our SD table, it goes from 60 to 139. And so the standard distribution table gives you the numbers in general of what you can roll with the 4D10. And so you roll them out, put them in a nice row, or roll them one at a time, and then look that number up in there. And then the row and the column and then the row gives you the actual score.
In the branching skill tree system, you have like 4 different layers?
Not necessarily 4. The one in the character sheet has 3 for the vehicle, and then the psionic has just 2. But you can be much more specific if you want to.
Oh, okay.
That's the flexibility of it. You and the game master can come up with some skills and then branch it down into some specifics. Let me see if I can find a good example here. See, there's a 4 one here with a vehicle, and it's on page 20 of my book. It's vehicle, internal combustion, aircraft, fixed wing. Let's see. I'm trying to find I thought there was a good combat one. Here's a combat one that's just, this is a 3 where we'd have a combat score, and then you studied non-recoil weapons, and then your specialization is laser. And you studied combat and unarmed, and your specialization is karate.
I like the non-recoil weapon because that applies to rocket launchers too.
You can never have too many rocket launchers.
Never, not once. Recoilless rifles are what we call them.
Recoilless explodey rifles. So good.
I was a huge Stargate SG-1 fan. There's a scene where Teal'c has like one of the lasers from one of the, what do they call them? Like the X-302s or whatever. And he's using that for a sidearm or a rifle.
Well, you can never have too many of them. That's good. So the thing I'm kind of getting from it, you know, I can kind of modify what my skills are depending on what I'm trying to accomplish.
I guess the way we put it is that you can use the skills at different levels. Like if you're going to use general knowledge, like general vehicle knowledge, you would use that score. If you're going to use air, like you wanted to fly a plane maybe rather than a helicopter, you could use that level of score. But then you'd have some serious modifiers on that, like, you know, a plane doesn't work the same way.
Right.
So Nathan, it's coming across more like it's specializations instead of general. So where it's the internal combustion engine for vehicle, you could also have non-internal combustion engines. So they're different skill set, but they're similar to other skill sets you would have. So where this one is vehicles and internal combustion, and then like aircraft, and then fixed wing. I mean, that's a very specific type of aircraft, as opposed to a non-fixed wing aircraft. I can't think of one right now. Actually, a non-fixed wing aircraft,
an like Osprey. Yeah, isn't an Osprey like a VTOL vertical takeoff?
Yeah, an Osprey would.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, that would be a non-fixed wing. And flying that is completely different than flying an airplane, because it takes off like a helicopter, but it flies like a plane. So you'd have to. So it's like with your general skill, you could kind of maybe figure it out, but with your specific skill in it, it'd be like, yeah, you know what you're doing, kind of deal.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like Nathan, you know how to drive, but you probably don't know how to drive a semi.
You don't know my life. No, I don't know how to drive.
Like, you could probably get in one and figure it out.
Right.
But it wouldn't be as effective as someone who's been driving trucks for 10 years.
Yeah, you'd have to put some serious modifiers on that. Like, you don't know how to drive a stick or, you know, whatever it is. So that'd be minus 20 or something. If you're trying to use the knowledge in general, that was where the modifiers come in.
Yeah, I'm not going to be very useful in a robbery. Just trying to do a heist. Oh no, I don't know what to do. I can't drive a stick shift. I'm so screwed.
Nathan's a safecracker. What's his skill? He knows what safes are.
Oh,
what's my skill? Yeah, I've heard of a safe. I hear that they're really nice this time of year.
I recognize one.
I know that that's called a tumbler. So there's terminology. I got that going. I would probably get the negatives for like anxiety because there's just a lot of pressure.
Yeah, that's where we have the equalizers on the character sheet. You'll see the anxiety is -5. And that's kind of like the currency to buy the talent of +5. In this particular case. And so with the equalizers, you can take anything you want. You want to have some kind of personality quirk, like you have to wear a hat or you're crazy or something like that. Mm. And so in this particular case, the player has to play like they have some anxiety. And in the one shot, these kids are recruited, quote unquote, by a mysterious man for his nefarious organization. And so they kind of suddenly find themselves in this bad situation. So anytime they have to make a roll, like they want to try to accept the fact that they're prisoners, they have to roll with that anxiety as a -5 modifier. On the other hand, when they get down to being able to use their psionics, they have that extra 5 talent. That is added on to the mind score for the psionics, which is what gives the 120 in the psionic score on the character sheet.
Oh, all right. How low have these scores gone? Because I can tell you that I would end up being the bottom of whatever that score was. So how low have you seen the scoring end up going?
Oh, gosh, I can't really say for sure how low I've seen it go. In the rule book, it says if your character has taken damage in the course of play or whatever, and the body score or the mind score get down to 60, you're unable to move or you're unconscious. You know, if the quality drops below that, then, you know, you're pretty much a goner.
Right.
We use the same scale as the IQ score. And 100 is the average for a population. And sure. So that's what these scores reflect. You know, if you have a quality of 110, then, you know, you're above average. And so we thought that was a more meaningful stat. So with 60, you're pretty much, you're not there anymore, pretty much.
Yeah. I'm just looking at flowers and they look lovely.
They're wonderful. And I don't care anything.
Pretty great. Yeah, I don't care.
Yep.
Now, something that I really liked in the branching system was the idea that, like, as I go down the line, I can kind of modify a little bit up and down for other branches underneath. So, like, if we're looking at the sheet that you had given me, like, the quality is 110, but then we've modified that a little bit for body and mind, which is right underneath it, so it goes to 105 and 115. Is 5 points pretty much the most that I can, like, adjust from one category to the next?
Yeah, we say 10 is the most. And okay. So if you want to focus on either body or mind and the associated skills after that, then you can shift points up to 10. But they have to average the ancestors.
Okay. So if I want to try and do that, if I say I really want to be super good at helicoptering, for instance, would I just try and like move as many points as I could, like the 10 points as I go down the skill list, or
hover over people constantly?
That's how I gain skills. Perfect.
Yeah, that's the definition of a helicopter parent.
Nathan's just going to helicopter over the party.
Oh, okay. So he's the helicopter unicorn.
Player.
Yeah, the helicopter player.
There you go.
Yeah. So if you're given a quality of 110 and you wanted to be a really super duper pilot, then you'd probably shift your mind score down to, let's see, it'd be 100 and get the body score up to 120. And then your motion skill, you could just let that 120 flow down into the motion. And so then that would change all these vehicle scores up by roughly 10.
I see how that works. So now, how would my character progress? Like, how would I get better at things?
Yeah, there's some rules for doing some training and such in here. I have to admit, I'm a little soft on those. You could say, you know, you could make an agreement with the game master that you want to do some more training and try to take another term in something that could give you more helicopter skills.
Okay. Is there any way that, like, my quality score could increase over time?
That, I think, is usually a baseline where you start off. No, I don't think I've ever played it with that happening.
Okay, so like the basic kind of skill line, that's pretty well set. It's when I get more specific skills, I might be able to make those better.
You could put more skill points in, yes.
Like, how do I accrue skill points? Is there like an experience system or something as I go through the game?
I would say it's more of a term. We've been, you know, like spacers and such like that, and so it's been learn as you go.
Yeah,
and then can pick up some skill scores that way. The game master could probably do some ruling on that.
Do I have to worry about like equipment or anything like that? If it feels like this is mostly every verse is more about the actual individual rather than like what they have on them. Yeah.
Yeah, we do have some equipment lists with some rules to how you can get some money with using the exponential dice rolls and such like that. But they're a little more complicated than I have gone through
right.
On a podcast.
Sure. I just kind of imagined that a lot of that equipment equates to like equalizers. You know, they give me pluses or minuses depending on what I'm using.
There are some rules in there about that, yes.
Okay, terrific. Yeah, I was really interested in this system just because I really have never seen, like, from the second that you actually look at one of the sheets, it is very different than anything that I've seen before, because you are able to kind of like go down the line and really tweak your character. When did like that branching system really take form in the way I'm looking at it right now?
Oh, I really couldn't say for sure. It's probably been a while, probably since we were playing in the 90s.
So this was a really early development.
I believe so. I found some old character sheets. Like I said, we had a gaming reunion about 3 years ago. And so I went through and was looking for one character in particular and found her. And so, yeah, this was one I hadn't played in, yeah, probably since the 90s sometime, late 90s.
What is your favorite character to play, your favorite type of character to play?
My favorite character, her name was Jem. And yes, she was a rock star with pink hair and a really questionable taste in wardrobe. And she was a psychic with aura powers. She had a really cool spaceship that looked like it was on fire, because my favorite song around that time was Serpentine Fire by Earth, Wind & Fire. Mm-hmm. And she usually, you know, she'd go on tour and end up getting involved in something other than just making music.
Sounds about
Did
right.
she like holograms? I have to know.
Oh, probably.
Probably.
That's how the ship looked like it was on fire, Nathan.
Oh, see, it all comes full circle. Very good. Perfect. If I were looking at like vehicles, and I could do vehicles, but then I could kind of do air, and then I could kind of do helicopter. If I'm better at doing helicopter than my normal air ability is, does that mean that something else I might not be as good at? Like maybe a plane, I'd be, you know, hindered because I'm better at helicoptering.
I would say that, yeah, you probably want to play it that way, that if you were going to try to escape from a situation and you had an airplane but not a helicopter, then yeah, you would endeavor to get in there and the game master would have to put on some modifiers like, oh my God, they're chasing you, and mm-hmm. you have to try to figure out how to start the thing and run the controls, and you don't have any time to look at it, and you don't have any time for a pre-flight, and have to give you at least a minus 20 or so on your skills. So you'd end up rolling against you know, like a 96 rather than your 116. Yeah, there'd be some probably heavy modifiers in there.
When you were saying like your quality getting down to a certain point, like when you get down to 60 and you're starting to just get into, I want to just smell the pretty flowers territory, how does my quality score decrease? Is that when I'm just not succeeding at certain things?
No, it's more if you take damage, like some kind of a psychic thing, a ritual, something like that. More into the paranormality book, which is the first of the supplements that goes with the basic rules here. Then the second supplement is called Everyverse RPG Future History, where we go into the possible 10,000 years into the future of where mankind could be. So those are the kind of things that where you take damage. You know, sometimes I think there's a good example in the paranormality about somebody is trying to do drugs. I think that might be in the non-combat damage, where you might get poisoned or you might have an illness. You might go into go insane for some reason, and some medication where your quality can go down in both the basic rules and in paranormality.
It sounds something I'm familiar with, and it does sound like something that can be really fun, and you can make your characters very specific to a skill set, which is always, always interesting.
You have a lot of ability to modify your character and tweak it right down to some pretty small levels if you want. I suppose if it's mm-hmm. yeah, if you want, if the game master will allow you.
And you have enough skill points. And you have enough skill points.
Yep, that too. All important factors, folks. Make sure you have those things. when you had mentioned a few of the one shots that you had, I was like, these are really different. Are there specific kinds of scenarios or example scenarios that you give in the book for people to kind of like work with for the system?
That is in the Future History Supplement, and Dennis left 19 seed ideas for possible scenarios, and I'm hoping that as we go along and try to grow this company, that we can put out those canned modules. But yeah, he's got one for the middle and one for the end, like the transition point between eras. And so some of the eras are, you know, of course, the cyberpunk. And then there's one, the colonial and expansion and on through like Renaissance.
So a little bit kind of like an alternate kind of history settings. Mm-hmm. Sort of that. Okay.
Yes.
Excellent. Yeah. Oh, beautiful. And there were 19 of those.
Yes. And then a gentleman who named Jeremy in Hawaii has really taken a liking to the system and did some scenarios as well. And so we may incorporate those someday. And that would be like, you know, 20 possible canned modules that we could come up with.
Yeah. Nice, even 20. That's always
good. Yeah, let's shoot for 20. That works for me.
It's a nice round number. It's easily divisible. It's good. I like those.
I just need more time to do it. Right now, all of us are working other professional jobs. And mm-hmm. my friend Jim and his son Josh are helping me the most now with a little bit of other input from Jim's other son, Jared. And so it's like, okay, come on, we need to build this company so everybody can just come and work for me.
Yeah, we need to get it so that everyone can just work here. I like the idea too that you have like another generation now that's now working on the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had that game, we had quite a mix. We had four of us original players. Jim was the game master as like the next oldest, as it were. And then his three sons played, and Rich and his two sons played. And we also had another new guy, a friend of Rich's named Carrie, and me. And so it was nine guys and me.
But you can just claim experience.
I'm the only geek wife.
So the people that are working on it now, basically like your original group and also like the kids.
Yes.
Is it available to the public? Is it out there?
Yes, it's out on drivethroughrpg.com. We're also on Amazon. Dennis has an author page. Also on lulu.com as an ebook, and as well as, of course, on Amazon. And so three of the four books now are published. I am out with the help of Jim and his son, Josh. We're working on the fourth book. And then we have to finish that and at least one module to finish off our Kickstarter, which funded, it's about 2 years ago now. We're going to finish that off and then hopefully moved on to the canned modules. And we also have a website, which is www.pardonusgaming.com.
Yeah, I really like what you've done here. I'm really just interested in the idea that it's almost like one of the oldest game systems that I've really gotten a chance to talk about on the show that I just didn't even know about. And we finally get to see it. I think that that's pretty great.
I'm so glad that I'm finally able to focus the time on it. I wanted to do it for even after he passed. And then I got laid off from IT back at late 2014. And then after like 6 months of trying to figure out what I could do, I was like, oh my God, I can do this. And so here we go. It's been out like since late 2015. And so I'm really working hard on promotion, getting the word out there now.
Sure.
As well as finishing off the books.
Something I like to ask people when they come on to talk about a specific game is if there's any advice for people who are going to be new to this. For players, for GMs, if they pick up Eververse, for instance, what kind of advice would you give to them starting out?
Oh, wow. Gosh, that's a good one. I have no idea. If you have questions, if you have any questions, I guess the best place to go is the Pardon Us Gaming website and send us an email. We'll be more than happy to try to help you out. Or go on Facebook. We have a page on Facebook. And so, yeah, try to send us if you have any questions. We'd be more than happy to help. Yep, that's probably the best that I can do in general. And sure. So if there's anything in specifically, I've had somebody ask me, you know, how would I define a superhero character? Well, I would start by giving them an extremely high quality.
Right.
Based on their, you know, if they're an X-Men, maybe you want to focus on mind rather than body. You know, if it's Captain America you want to play, then, you know, he has an extremely high quality and probably more of a higher body skill, but no slouch in the mind department. You know, right. If you want to play Tony Stark, again, high quality, but focus on the mind. That's what we've done all these years.
Yeah, that's pretty good advice anyway. I think that's good advice for people is, you know, just to think about, you know, what your quality score is going to be and that, you know, you have to kind of think about what your character is to figure out what the stats for that character are.
Right.
But if you have a more specific question, there'll be resources available for you. Anyone out there?
If I don't know the answer, I'll figure it out. Or I'll get Jim to help me figure it out.
We'll get the team on it.
We'll get the team on it. That's right.
We're going to make this happen.
Actually, it sounds like a really interesting system that you've taken the ideas for and the work for and just improved upon it and brought it to fruition. And that's really awesome. And it sounds overall like a really interesting and fun game that I hope people get to enjoy.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's actually just really inspiring. That, you know, the work that, you know, Dennis had put in over all of the years, you know, you were saying how he was really hoping one day he might be able to see it published. And now here you are. It's out there for all of us to enjoy as well. So a big thank you to Dennis and a big thank you to you, Deborah, for coming
thank
on the show.
You.
And as you said, Pardon Us Gaming, you can go over to the website. We'll make sure to give a link in the description. Does the company have any social media presence or anything else if people want to get a hold of you?
Let's see. I'm on Twitter as Deborah Honig Parizic and on Instagram as everyverse.rpg. And we're going to be at Gen Con this year. So come and see us if you're there. We'll be we'll be there with the International Game Designers Network in most likely in their game area and not on the exhibition floor. But I think, as I understand it, they get a room for all the demo games. So, please come and see us.
Yes. Alex and I would love to be there at some point, but we have yet to get out to Gen Con. Why, Alex?
Financial reasons, Nathan.
Time and money.
Yeah, I understand.
That whole Patreon thing, Nathan, needs to take off before we go to Gen Con.
It's a work in progress. That being said, though, thank you to our patrons that do help us out and keep the digital lights on, especially to our shiny level patrons, Bonnie Ainsworth and Dominic Perry. Anyway, Alex, if folks out there wanted to find the character sheets for the Delve crew, where could they go?
You can find our character sheets, as it were, I guess, over at delvecast.com.
Yeah, everything that we do is over there. And also make sure to follow us on Twitter. I'm at Citanium.
I'm at EXP Limited, and the show is at Delve Podcast.
And you can find the podcast on all sorts of podcast apps like iTunes and Google Play and Spotify. Yes, even Spotify. Ha ha. We did it. We made it to the mountaintop. So there. Again, I want to thank Deborah Honig Parizic for being on the show and telling us all about Eververse. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. I had a great time.
Yes, thank you.
And thank you all for listening. And until next time, we will see you in the Eververse. Bye, everybody.
Bye.